Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Well, because what we do very well in this country is we share our historical stories, fiction, non-fiction, our mythology and all that. But my next guest believes not all stories are remembered equally. And when Kim Curran saw that Ireland's ancient pagan goddess of war, fury and sovereignty was becoming smaller and smaller, she took it upon herself to retell the story in all of its massive and furious glory. And the results is the novel The Morrigan. And Kim Curran is live from a BBC studio in London. Good morning to you, Kim.
Hey, Oliver.
How are you doing? You always have one foot in Ireland.
Yes, my heart's in Ireland, but the home is over here.
So you're originally, where are you originally? Is it Dublin? And
I was originally,
yeah,
I was
Tipperary?
Born in Dublin. Yeah, so born in Dublin, and then we lived in Naas for a bit, and then Thurles. So Thurles is probably where I have most of my childhood memories. And then I moved to, the whole family moved to London when I was about 8. So you wouldn't know that I was born in Ireland from my accent, but I still have the Irish passport, and
funny enough,
I can tell. Still there.
No, it's still definitely in there. I'm moving to London at 8 after all that experience. That must have, do you have memories of what that felt like?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it was easier for me. I have two older sisters, and I think being a bit older was harder for them to make new friends and settle in. But I just kind of enjoyed the adventure of it all. I do miss, and I have a huge family back at home. Hello, all my many, many cousins and uncles and aunts. So it was great to have them back there to be able to come back and see.
And home were everywhere was very always important to you, because your dedication to the book is to your father, who was a bit of a storyteller.
Oh, he is. He was a natural storyteller, I think, like many Irish men. So he told me a lot of these tales of Cú Chulainn and Children of Lear and all our kind of Irish myths. And it's also dedicated to my mother as well. So
yes, I was coming to that because
your
father tells you the stories. Your mother taught you the truth of them, which is very nicely put.
So it's the combination of my mother raised me a feminist. So that's kind of what I mean by that.
That comes as no surprise, even into the early stages of the book, because, the Morrigan, she loves the country, doesn't she, first of all? And the way the landscape is evoked here is really incredible. It's beautiful. So well done that, because we read in awe about, you know, Greek mythology. But your novel really reminds us we have epics of our own here.
Oh, I mean, amazing stories. And I think that was really what drew me to, I wanted to write about these stories. You kind of, there's a handful of books that have done it, but really there weren't enough. I want, you know, this to be a new beginning of an Irish renaissance of bringing back all of these stories. I think we all know them maybe on a surface level, but just to realise they are as great and epic as any of the big stories out there, as the, you know, the Iliad or the Odyssey, we can punch our weight against them.
Absolutely. Now, you couldn't have written this without gallivanting through Ireland, and that's what you had to do.
Yeah, so I was very lucky in that the Society of Authors gave me a grant that meant that I was able to travel over on a research trip and visit some of the archaeological sites. So off to Fort Navan, Emin Macha, and then down to Rathcoggan, which is Queen Maeve's fort. And there's a particular cave there that's known as the Morrigan's Cave. So I crawled down on my belly and through the mud with a friend of mine to try and kind of experience what it would have been like. So that was amazing to get a sense of the place. And as you say, the landscape is so tied to all Irish stories. Like, you know, you can't really separate, I think, the Irish stories from the landscape.
That cave is, it's Oí na Gcat, isn't it? The cat caves.
Oí na Gcat, exactly, the cave of the cats.
Regarded as, I think, the birthplace of Halloween as well.
Yes.
So many stories.
All the beasties would come crawling out of there and cause havoc on Halloween, yeah.
And there's it's really well, when the Morrigan disappears for a while, which she does quite a bit in the story, she goes to these places and sort of stays there, absorbs into the land, into the walls, basically.
Yeah, sort of lose herself. I think these kind of spaces between spaces, I think, is another key thing that you see in Irish myths, of these worlds overlapping. So she exists between these spaces. So she kind of loses a sense of herself. It dissolves into almost the stone and the dirt, and then comes back.
Eoin Waka, you mentioned there, or Navan Fort, as it's sometimes known, up in Armagh City. I haven't been there since I was a child. You loved it up there.
Yeah, and it was amazing, you know, going the tour and hearing the stories being told and getting a sense of being able to stand there and see the landscape and imagine what it would have been like. That was amazing. And I think one of the things I found most interesting is they were saying at one point the whole fort had been burnt down to the ground.
Yeah.
So I kind of wove that into the novel as well.
Lovely. The Morrigan, it kind of retells all these myths of this ancient goddess, war, fury. They're broad range of stories. So how do you whittle it down? I mean, you went back to original translations and watched how they changed over the years.
Yeah, so essentially, unfortunately, I don't speak Irish, and I certainly wouldn't be able to read ancient Irish. But so a key was to read as many different translations as I could, and you can kind of see how with each version, particularly the Morrigan, she was written out. So I think the story I grew up with was, as you mentioned at the start, the beautiful woman trying to woo Cú Chulainn. Yeah. But that's quite a new addition, really. If you go back, there's a much older version of her, and there's a much older version of the two of them meeting for the first time, much more in a kind of political battle over land, represented by battle over cattle. And then that version was taken away and this sort of new princess version was brought in. So it's really interesting almost seeing the geology of storytelling and the decisions that are being made of, you know, the versions and why people might be making those different choices. So that was fascinating.
And who's making those choices? What's going on?
I mean, from my point of view, I guess you look at a lot of the kind of early Christian monks taking these pagan stories and one trying to put them into some grand Christian narrative, but also maybe not really understanding, like, you can see that the Morrigan's not that happy with Cú Chulainn. And so you think a monk might be saying, why might this be? Oh, maybe, you know, he spurned her. Oh, that makes sense to me. So trying to reinterpret this incredibly complicated layered character who maybe might not make that much sense at the time. So I think those decisions are being made. And Queen Maeve is another one who I think history's done dirty by. A lot of the versions of her have not sort of hold up to the incredibly powerful, politically savvy woman that we see in the very early stories, the early versions of her.
Yeah, the kind of strengths of women, if they're good at battles at all, or they're kind of vicious and rather than brave.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
The Morrigan, she's not the easiest person in the world to love. But I think a lot of that is the point of your story.
I guess I loved her. I don't think she's likable, but I loved her. I love how
Explain why we mightn't like her.
Well, she's not, you know, she kills a lot of people. She's quite ruthless. She's quite manipulative. She withhold truth when it serves her end, and you know she really goes after people, you know, and almost sometimes without particular reason. You know, she is viciousness to her. But what I loved about her was how comfortable she is with her fury, with her rage, which I think culture as a whole isn't that comfortable maybe with women's rage. And here's this person who just embodies it and is shameless. That I think is the most endearing quality about her.
Particularly because she acts on her rage.
She absolutely acts on it. And, you know, to the point that I now sometimes, if I'm feeling a bit nervous or don't know what to do, I say, what would the Morrigan do?
Very good. That's good.
Channel some of her.
It slightly makes me scared of you, but anyway.
Well, I'm in London at the moment, you're safe. Yeah,
exactly. The men in the story are mostly absolute eejits.
I mean, to be fair, I'm not sure anybody comes off well. But yes, I think that was what was so interesting, was seeing none of the men in the story are that, you know, are that good or that nice. They're very grey. They're very complicated. They do nasty things. And then yet they also have moments of being heroes and courage. And so I think I wanted to get down and have them as being more complicated, difficult characters rather than, I think particularly Cú Chulainn, who's this great hero that we hear about. But there's a lot more layers to him when you go looking for them.
There are. I mean, we're kind of, this is like a feminist conversation now. But
absolutely.
But the battles I found very entertaining. Maybe that's just in my head as a man reading it. But, you know, it was exciting. The Fomorians and all these people who are coming. It's always fighting over land, essentially. And the battles are quite exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I loved writing those battles. Like, I used to fence, so I kind of know my way around a sword and done lots of boxing. So I like fighting myself, I guess. So they were great to write and really could just unleash that. They're quite brutal and quite bloody and so they were great to write.
Most of these stories are treated nowadays as young adult strands. So you've done the opposite. This is not a young adult book, we should have said by now, or a kid's book. It's very much for adults. She's profane. People are profane. It's very violent. Why was the decision made there?
I think it felt like it was doing her justice to be able to have her be that raw and that brutal and vicious, and that lent itself, I think, more to the adult telling.
That it's as simple as that. You wanted to,
yeah.
You wanted to get kind of down and dirty with the story, really.
And I think there's also a degree of, so I had written books for young adults before, but this is my first book for adults. And this was the first book maybe I really wrote for myself as an adult. So, you know, trying to channel some of my own fury as, you know, living in the world that we do. So it just naturally came out as a book speaking to adults.
Now, the story itself, because it's kind of, is it a quest for happiness? And she just tries on different forms. And it is that theme, isn't it? That women have to be all things to everybody.
Absolutely. It's a great question. One of the first things I wrote is like, what makes her so angry? And what would make her have peace? So I think not necessarily happiness, but I think it's a search for her place in the world and a sense of coming to terms with who she is. And like you say, she tries on, you know, she's a warrior, she's a mother, she's a ruler. She tries all these different things. And then finally, it's really only with age that she kind of comes into her own self and her own peace. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's happiness, but it is a sort of coming to peace with who she is.
And of course, because we're celebrating St. Bridget's Day, Bridget also features in the story.
She does. So Bridget's one of the, as you said, what the goddess version of Bridget. So so one of the Tuatha Dé Danann, the tribe of gods that the Morrigan was one of. So she's there. She appears in the early stories. She has this tragic story with her son dying. So we see her there as someone as almost like an opposite to the Morrigan. So as the Morrigan is angry and battle and war, Bridget is healing and kindness, and so they become a little bit oppositional to each other.
And the invention of keening as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was really interesting. So the first time the keening was heard in Ireland was when Bridget wept for her son. So that's just beautiful to think that, you know, this pain that goes back from every woman who's lost a son goes and a child and goes back all of these centuries. So that was a great little, you know, as you're reading all these stories, you see this line and you kind of think, oh, that's fascinating.
It really is. It's like the greatest hits of our mythology and folklore. It was a brilliant idea. Well done, Kim Curran.
Oh, and thank you so much.
That's not enough. The book is exciting enough. The audio book is recorded by who?
Mairéad Tyers, the glorious Mairéad Tyers. And my God, what a beautiful job she's done.
People know her as a lead. She's in the Disney series Extraordinary, and she's really one of the really, she's absolutely brilliant. So enjoy
she's
that.
So
enjoy the success of this. But Kim Curran, The Morrigan, is out now. It's out on Monday the 6th, actually, isn't it?
Thursday the 6th,
You can pre-order at will. But Kim Curran, thank you so much.
And
enjoy your weekend. Happy St. Bridget's Day to you. Bye-bye.
And to you. From the